Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Can Save Us podcast, brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I'm one of your co-hosts, Paul David, co-founder and CEO of Literal Humans, and I'll let my co-founder and co-host introduce himself.
Hey, team. Will, the other co-founder and chief strategy officer. Excited to have another wonderful podcast experience with you all.
And we are joined today by Olivia DeRamos, founder and CEO of Communia. Olivia, give us a quick, few sentence headline about what Communia is and, what you've built.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on. Excited to be here. Communia is a social networking app and self-development platform for women and marginalized genders that's really out to revolutionize and rethink how women connect with others and themselves. And so we do a lot of work in terms of user well-being and really how can tech improve women's lives in a way that hasn't been done before.
Well, as we always do on Tech Can Save Us, we're going to jump right into the headlines and then talk about a couple of headlines that are relevant specifically to your work, Olivia, and just to get your perspectives you can share with the audience about what's timely. One of the pieces we share with you was about schedules and how unpredictable schedules can have the impact of widening the gender pay gap, which really seems to be so stubborn. So I'm sure it's an issue, obviously, you care about deeply. You're working on the issue. You're bringing women together to address the issue. Very curious to hear your perspective on scheduling, the gender pay gap, and how we reduce it.
This was an interesting one. I feel like, as the CEO of a social media app, there's always... it's an unpredictable schedule. Anyone on the team in any kind of public facing company will know that, right? So I have some strong opinions. I think it's really, really notable how much people are always quick to say, oh, well, women can't cope with unpredictable schedules and women aren't as quick to volunteer for overtime. Because in my experience, and I know in the experience of everyone that I work with and every professional woman that I've ever met, I think we're more likely to volunteer for overtime and we're more likely to be willing to jump in at a moment's notice. And so, while I appreciate the points that article brings up, and it was certainly well-researched, I just have kind of an issue with that overall pushing that narrative, right, of women being in some way less capable because we do have more responsibilities and yet we're willing to take on more work. And I think we should be applauded for that.
100% totally agree with that. And just to that point, then kind of the wider point, like, what do you think are the main drivers of the persistent pay gap that, everyone says, hey, this is bullshit and let's fix it. But for some reason just does not seem to, it gets a little better every year, but it still seems ridiculously stubborn and persistent. What are you, in your opinion, are those main drivers and, how do we defeat them essentially?
There's obviously so much said about this issue and so many other kind of feminist, current affairs topics. But I think a lot of it just comes down to this one core point, which is that women are still not taken seriously. Our work is not taken seriously. Our needs are not taken seriously. We live in a sexist society. I think we've, made so many gains in recent years, especially with the Me Too movement. But I think it kind of has lulled people into thinking, okay, we're pretty advanced. But actually, we're not. And there's still so much to go on just a societal level, right? In terms of, there's no fix for sexism. You just have to, as a society, teach men to not be sexist. And that's slow going. So it's going to take a lot of time. And I think there are so many other points to be made on this topic, but I think really that's the core of it for me.
It's been a really humbling experience starting at the agency and realizing we've just made a shift to the 40 work week, which I think in many ways I think can be a truly feminist move to allow people to have more time and space to take care of their families. And just, that's not to pat ourselves on the back, but it's just made me realize a lot of our team members who identify as women are using that extra time to support their families or to care for folks who in their families who need care and just that sort of little difference in terms of where the emotional labor is being done and not to take away from, anyone on the team who's using it for just, fun things and stuff like that, but just realizing that that is happening and that's, we're opening a space for that. But it just made me think how can we create structures? And the article talks a bit about this, hiring float employees and allowing employees to switch shifts and working in teams. So work can be passed back and forth, but it just got me thinking about what structures we can put in place to kind of reduce the burden for folks of all, genders and sexes who need to spend time caring for families and, supporting other folks.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that there's a major burden should be on employers, right? As employers, we should be really, really careful with how we treat our employees. We're not successful without our team. And I laugh when I see like on those articles lately, those big CEOs who are, you know, have like huge, are the heads of huge conglomerates, and they're all complaining about how like all their employees are quitting and they're saying that they're lazy. And it's like, no, you're clearly not treating your team correctly. Actually, those answers are quite obvious, but not enough people are willing to really face the facts that, no, you are beholden to your team, and that's your number one responsibility, to take care of them.
Yeah, it's that classic, like, how could everyone leave? We put ping pong tables in the common areas. Like, well, what's going on?
Definitely. I think leadership is always a challenge, but at the same time, it's not a challenge to treat people with, you know, respect and consideration. I think that's often, like, very much overlooked, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's good that you brought up the burden of employers. I actually got into this conversation with my partner, and who's a woman, and about like, what's the burden, you know, like, how much should employers burden? And I think, like, you know, I was coming from a very like, well, I'm the employer, and like, I think the government should do more, you know what I mean, to support employers, to like help. And she was sort of coming to the perspective of, well, like, this is where we are right now. This is the status quo, and employers need to step up to the plate and stuff like that. And it was interesting back and forth. I think that's a good segue into the second piece we share with you, which was an article about the new women's health strategy that the UK has just launched. I mean, stylist here. A lot of the focus is on some core needs like breast cancer and, you know, helping women who are dealing with endometriosis and things like that. So curious to hear your perspective about like what you've initially read about the strategy. Do you think it's going to be effective, and what's your early take?
So I have a lot of opinions on this. And also, I know a lot of actually community members have a lot of opinions on this. The largest demographic that we have on the app are British young women ages 18 to 30. It seems like every other day I'm seeing women posting about how they have endometriosis or some other important health problem, and they cannot get seen by a doctor, or their needs aren't taken seriously, or they can't get diagnosed, and they're turning like more and more to alternative, you know, ways of care because they just cannot get the care they need from, you know, the NHS. And I think it's really sad. And, you know, when reading those plans, I, you know, it's a start. And I think I'm on the same page as a lot of people on Twitter, right? Like, it's okay. But I think it's a lot more needs to be done. And I think also, in terms of, you know, the woman's health not being niched out, right? I think, you know, even if with communia, like anything that's like for a woman or a marginalized gender and that is not like male centric is very niched out. It's not part of the mainstream. And that's certainly the case with healthcare, I think, in the UK and also in the US. Don't even get me started on what's going on in America, right? Like, we'll be here all day. It's okay. But I think women absolutely need more in the UK specifically.
Yeah, you always worry just that might almost kind of be the plan of the Conservatives, is have the system fail and fall under its own weight because they don't really believe in national health. So whenever I see any part of the NHS not working, I always think, is this kind of the idea that you're trying to push everyone to private healthcare because that's ultimately what you want and you want to sell off the NHS? So scary times.
And as much as I just complained, you don't want what America has. Like, no, like you don't. Like, no, like, you don't want that to happen, right? I mean, I remember when I first moved to the UK and I, like, really injured my knee and I was crying at the hospital thinking I was going to have to go home because I couldn't afford to stay there with, like, medical expenses. And they looked at me like I was an idiot. They were like, just go home. It's fine. And I wouldn't leave. Like, it took them 10 minutes to convince me that I didn't have to pay anything to get my knee looked at. And that was amazing. I'll never forget that moment, realizing I wasn't going to be, you know, penniless because I had an injury. So, you know, props to the NHS too, because, you know, it's certainly superior to the American system for sure.
One of the things I appreciated in the piece was this quote from Women's Equality Party leader, Mandy Reid, about, you know, the plan being a small step in the right direction. But I think this quote, it just said it so beautifully. I'll just read it here. We are 51% of the population, and therefore the NHS must not fall into the trap of reinforcing the default male syndrome, she wrote. Women's health should not be ghettoized as a niche branch of medicine. Like, I think that's so interesting, like that tension of like, yes, we need to focus on the acute needs of women. And yes, they are the majority of the population. But how do we not sort of ghettoize and niche down too much so that we're, you know, just kind of defaulting to the male perspective? How do you think, you know, like the NHS and sort of the broader community should navigate that particular tension?
Yeah, I mean, I think so much of it starts in university and what, you know, medical students are taught and how they're taught it. You know, there are so many exciting new startups, exciting new ideas that are really thrilling. But I think ultimately, so much of societal change will come down to improving the systems that we already have, right? You know, really getting universities to step up to the plate, really getting our government to step up to the plate. Yeah, if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. And I think the Mender Reed, I think, spoke to that as well in terms of like pulling down some of these structures that kind of default to, like you said, medical students being trained in the default, you know, male syndrome way. And yeah, that's really, really important. Just want to move us to the next piece that we talked about, you know, connected to the medical issue, women's safety. I mean, obviously, we've seen like a terrible, awful spate of attacks in the UK pretty recently. And, you know, it's just this like basic question of like the statistics we saw in this piece, they're terrifying. You've created a safe space for women online. What else do you see or imagine being creative for the future of women's safety based on what you've created and what's needed out there?
I love that you brought this up because, again, I think it's really interesting how we talk about women's safety and violence against women. I love technology. Like, I'm not actually from the, you know, tech space. I came from nonprofits before I started Communia, and every day I'm blown away by the endless possibilities in tech. It's truly astounding. But at the same time, I think that if a man wants to attack a woman, there is no technological piece of innovation that I or anyone else could do to stop that. And so again, I think it really comes down to societal change, right? And the fact that whether people want to admit it or not, we are in a society that is like full of rape culture. And it's how we have to really start talking about things differently and really push back on even like, you know, if you're at a club and the behavior that goes down there, it starts at that small of a, you know, micro level. But to add to that, though, I think that we're in an interesting position again with like everything that just happened with the repeal of Roe v. Wade. I mean, women, you know, again, wearables are a huge trend in this area, right? But also women are now more, and any kind of, I think, consumer is more and more worried about living in a police state, right? How much they're going to be looked at, how they're going to be tracked, whose information is shared. So I think we're really kind of at a pivotal moment, to be honest, about, you know, tech and how we can support women, but also support women without going too far in a world where increasingly, at least for the US, we're more and more monitored for, you know, nefarious purposes.
One of the things that I always terrifies me is like, and I fully find myself responsible for this kind of bias in my head as well, thinking like, hey, we've made so much progress, like, you know, these things aren't solved, but they're on the way to being solved. And, you know, I have faith in that. But then you counterpoint that with like, you know, I don't think I know a single female friend who doesn't have a story about being assaulted in some way. And like to the point where a story that will almost get told to you is like, and this just happened. When you actually stop and think about it, it's like, that's awful. Like, that's so bad. And, you've got to the point where you're almost normalizing it. Like, it's kind of, you know, I stepped in a puddle today. That's the level of annoyance you should be in. It is terrifying. Like, it just kind of backs up. Of course, things like the repeal of Roe versus Wade start to make sense when you realize like, yeah, well, every woman you've ever met has probably been sexually assaulted at some point in your life. How awful is that? Like, there's a very different view of like how you think the world works and how it actually works in practice that is awful every time you are confronted with it.
You know, I've been advocating for, you know, survivors of sexual assault since I came to the UK 6 or 7 years ago. And I think it's really interesting how the conversation has changed, especially in the last 2 years. When I first was telling journalists that there is an epidemic of sexual assault, yes, in the UK too, not just in America, nobody believed me. They were like, that's not a thing. It doesn't happen. And that's certainly not the perspective has certainly shifted. Now people are a lot more willing to address the problem. But I think, you know, there's still so much room for improvement when it comes to, you know, the UK specifically, and of course America, but, you know, just in terms of, you know, who we're talking to right now, in terms of addressing the problem, right? Like in the UK, I mean, again, I keep going back to universities because that's where kind of my core work extends to is young women. At least in the US, we have Title IX, right? This a federal law that really regulates how things like, you know, violence against women, sexual assault, things like that are handled. In the UK, nothing like that exists. And so it's up to like every single individual university to handle it differently. And so much of the time it's handled extremely poorly. There are so many innovations that the tech space is creating and, you know, Communia is included in that, but there's nothing that I can do as an individual, as an advocate, or as, you know, the founder of a tech startup for women to support women if the universities and our institutions are not really leading the charge on that work and are not willing to collaborate with us.
I'd be curious, it was sort of an imaginative exercise for you, but kind of a two-part question. Imagine you were counseling a group of male tech founders about starting a parallel community to Communia for men, you know, and specifically with the goals of, you know, addressing male violence against women and rape culture and just making men better, frankly, let's just put it that way, right? A, should there be a community like that? And B, how would you counsel them in terms of how they should start it, what it should look like, what should its structures look like, I guess?
There should definitely be a community like that. There are some Instagram pages that I've seen, and there are definitely people working in that space, but there isn't like any sort of formalized project, I would say, that I've seen. And if anyone wants to start it, please get in touch, because I'd love to be involved. And I think there's just, again, and like men have struggled with issues too, like toxic masculinity, all of these, you know, assumptions of what a male should be, how a man should act. It's very harmful too. Men struggle with mental health all the time. And there are so many other, you know, issues that men struggle with too, and deserve support. So it's really all interconnected. And, you know, there really does need to be more support on both sides, and education, really, because schools do not teach consent adequately whatsoever at a baseline, right? And that's just one of so many things. And I'd start there to answer your question. I would start there with consent. I think that's core. Once you really grasp consent, you know, everything kind of tends to come easier after that. That's a definitely core principle of being a good human.
I do think that is kind of the only way tech can potentially help with this. Like, totally agree, is that education piece. Like, one piece we spoke about on a previous podcast, like, you know, being able to give men the experience of being a woman through VR and be like, okay, well, here's what it's like to go to a club and deal with that shit, make jokes about it now. I think that's the only component that kind of tech can come in to solve such a real world issue that happens in real life, is, you know, that education piece and starting almost 5 years early to address that toxic masculinity.
And I would also add, before we move on, that, like, again, it's like, even mainstream social media platforms like Facebook, you know, they set the agenda, right? Like, their algorithm decides what gets seen, what goes viral. A lot of that time is really harmful content that really entrenches misogyny and encourages that. So I think also, you know, like, I'm talking about universities and our governments, but Facebook, big tech, I mean, there's a lot that they can do too, right? In terms of making choices that are healthier for their community members. And I mean, that would go a long way, considering so much of young people's education is through social media.
Yeah, they took it down for obvious reasons, but there used to be a tracker of like the 10 trending stories on Facebook each day. And it was always like, your Alex Joneses of the world. It was always awful, violent, angry rhetoric. So yeah, I think they have a huge amount to answer for, which I'm sure we'll get into when we talk about the evilest applications of tech later on in the pod.
Yeah, great question.
I want to give a quick shout out to one of the programs. I think you mentioned on social media, there's a couple of them, but one on Instagram called Men Who Take Baths. And I think Nicole Hodges started that. And it's just like, you know, men taking a bath, chatting about their feelings. I think it's sometimes to Nicole and other guests and stuff like that. But I think they've also incorporated a psychotherapist, you know, to work with men. They have a men's group and things like that. So like, more stuff like that, you know, that like kind of cheeky, interesting stuff that, you know, men can engage with and hopefully grow from it. I want to jump into your work and want to hear more about your journey with Communia, sort of where did it stem from? You know, what was the inspiration for it, and where do you see it going in the next few years here?
So I had a really tough early college experience. It's why I ended up moving to the UK. I really just could not dig myself out of that situation. I think a lot of people end up experiencing, you know, that in whatever form it may be, where they just can't change a bad situation for themselves. So when I realized I was kind of stuck in that situation, I had to get creative in how I was going to start feeling empowered again, how I was going to feel like I could still be myself, still like live a full life. And I thought that maybe if I couldn't really talk about or change my situation, maybe I could change other women's situations, right? Maybe I could help them talk to other women in an authentic way where they were felt safe and they could really express themselves. Because, you know, during my difficult time, yeah, okay, I had Instagram, I had Twitter. I couldn't tell people what was going on with me on Instagram and Twitter. I would have been trolled endlessly. And it would have just been, quite frankly, unsafe for me to do that. And so I really started thinking about, you know, what can I do? I was privileged to have an opportunity to build something. So what could I do, right, to maybe create an alternative, maybe create something that, you know, women could go to, marginalized genders could go to and say, hey, I'm not okay right now. This is why. I could really use some community support. Have you ever been through it too? And be met in return with thousands of women who have experienced that and have advice to share. not so much an emergency resource at all, but very much for those like gray area in between times. Maybe you're like crying at work because your boss was like really shitty to you and you don't know what to do, but you can go to Communia if you have the app on your phone, right? And you can say, hey guys, like this is going on. And you'll have all of these professional women being like, this is my advice. And then you've got that list of advice and that's instantaneous support. So that's really the core of what we're doing, right? And also, as we've continued to build it, I think it's really about creating a full system of support. So we recently launched Communia Self. It's a whole other half of the app. It's basically like two apps in one now, which was a lot of work. But I'm glad that we did it because it's all about, right, connecting with yourself as much as you're connecting with others. Because I think community support is so important when going through anything in life, whether that's good or bad. But also, you can't be too up into what other people are doing and what other people think. You also have to balance that with connecting to yourself and really understanding what you need and what your needs are. And I think that's where social media can get it really wrong, right? In terms of training us to think it's always about what other people think and what are other people doing. Well, this is us saying, no, let's give you a tool to also stop and think and reflect, as well as, you know, reaching out to others, which is important. And I think we do it in a really healthy way in community, which is the whole point, but it's always important to balance. And we're definitely practicing what we preach.
Is community venture backed as well?
No, we are a totally bootstrapped startup, which is, you know, I think any bootstrap startup is a journey, but we are looking to raise at some point soon, but we're such a mission-driven company that I've been really careful in who I bring on board in order to really retain, you know, I think all the level of creativity that really been able to implement and really, you know, do right by our users. So for us, it's been a slower process with that because again, I'm really here to be slow and steady and always prioritize user well-being. And as much as there are so many amazing investors out there, there are some investors who don't agree with that. And so it's important that we only work with the people who do.
You've already kind of spoken about some of the awesome features, but, you know, how have you and the team worked to ensure that Communia is kind of a safe digital space for women? You know, what are some of the really core products and features and just that makes it unique?
The number one thing that we do is we require you to be verified, your identity to be verified before you can use any social elements of the app. You can't support a post, which, you know, we don't have likes on the app. We have support buttons. You can't comment on a post. You can't add someone as a friend. You can't message them. You can't do anything until your identity is verified. So you do that on sign up if you want. Of course, we don't force people, but then you really can't engage with others or see the identities of people on the Me Too feed, you know, for obvious reasons, again, making sure that we do everything we can to maintain, you know, people's privacy. And it's worked really well. We give people two different options. You know, you can submit a form of ID if you want, or you can get a code that you then take a photo with of yourself with the code because some people don't have IDs. We really did not want to go with the AI route for a number of reasons, but mostly because, you know, we have a lot of trans and non-binary members of our community and AI really doesn't take that into consideration. Again, like a lot of issues with racism in AI. So we're really doing it manual. On the back end, it's all manual until we find, you know, a real automated platform that is genuinely safe and genuinely really takes all of these things that we're constantly trying to keep in mind as we go. On top of that, we also have community moderators. I was just reading an article about how Facebook like is being sued by their community moderators. They've like farmed out to, I think, South Africa and, you know, how poorly they're treated. And I just think that's insane because your community moderators in any like community-based business, whether it's an app or otherwise, are literally like the life of your business. Like it's a really hard job and it's a really important one in terms of keeping people safe. There's no replacement for real people really giving a shit. And that definitely is the case on Communia.
It's why Facebook is failing, something they will never understand, and why Twitter has never been profitable. If the only thing people use your social media platform is to shout angrily at others, you are never going to get people to stick around. They're like, oh, why are our user numbers dropping? Why does no one but angry 50-year-old uncles use our platform anymore with niche conspiracy theories? It's like, that's why you've built a shit social platform that no one wants to be on. You know, that's why TikTok's doing so well. It's fun. It has its own problems, but it's ultimately fun, like Facebook used to be when it first started out.
What's interesting that I find really obvious, I don't really know, again, like I don't understand why, you know, they have these amazing minds at Facebook and they're really not grasping this, is there's a level of care that any consumer absolutely requires, whether that's in tech or a dog brand or literally anything that they're using or engaging with or buying, that is just, you have to provide that as a business and you should. Facebook just doesn't. They just don't. And founders like me are, you know, seeing that white space and saying, well, why not provide an alternative?
Yeah, it's really interesting aspect of the conversation, the moderation piece. I just listened to a podcast the other day on Endless Thread about the Aunties Network on Reddit, which is a community to provide, you know, services and information for people seeking, you know, reproductive healthcare services. And it was, you know, incredible to listen to and how they walk through how they vetted people just like you do on Communia and how they really try to make it as a safe, you know, space as possible. And unfortunately, at the end of it, they sort of, you know, the post, the sort of epilogue was like, we had to shut it down, you know, because we take safety so seriously. And even one person gets, you know, God forbid, an anti-abortion, you know, activist gets in there and like picks someone up in a car, and you know, it's haunting, you know, unfortunately. So sort of leading my next question is like, you set this ambitious mission of, you know, creating a bit of a utopia on tech, you know, a place where we can connect, we can inform, we can uplift women and other folks from marginalized genders. So what would you see as like the big steps along that road to kind of get us to that utopia? Super easy question.
Yeah. Ooh, okay, sweating. No, but I it's a really great one. And I think it's an important one, not only for Communia and myself, but for any tech startup, any social media startup, big tech, you know, at my level, whatever. And I think there's a huge level of responsibility that cannot be exaggerated when you are building any type of community project. Like, even if, like, we talk about some really heavy stuff on Communia, Me Too, mental health, things like that. But also, even if we weren't, even if it was like literally just talking about like cosmetics, you know, I mean, it really cannot be exaggerated how much you really have to go into it without ego. And I think the more I get into the tech industry, the more I feel like a lot of mistakes have happened because of a lot of ego, to put it politely. And I think there needs to be a real purpose to what people are building. Like, building a new social media platform because you want to be like the next Facebook, like, isn't enough. Like, you need to really have a purpose and have a passion for anything. And I think that's the case in any industry now. But I think really it comes down to transparency and authenticity. And also, nothing is going to get better if it's the same white dudes making the same choices over and over and over again. Like, not in the metaverse, nothing. Like, it's going to be the same. And so there needs to also be like a huge level of diversity that just doesn't exist. And it's not because, you know, women aren't there. It's not because minorities aren't there. It's because they're not being hired for the jobs that they're qualified for. Like, they absolutely are there. They're not being given the funding. I think it's interesting. I think there's a long road to go. And I think also, I'm awake at night thinking about all of our users and, you know, are they safe? And have I done right by them today? Have we as a company done right by them? And if I had known the level of responsibility I was taking on, you know, back in the day when I started right out of university, I don't know if I would have done it, because it's an intense project. I'm really proud of what we're doing. But again, and especially at our level, like, we're still at such a small level that I really, every day I see those headlines about Facebook and it's like, just care. And there's just, again, it's going back to that, a level of care that is not pervasive enough in the tech industry.
As soon as you actually start talking about responsibility and meaning it, that's the difference. And to be fair to them, they are probably no more evil than any of the other big social media players. They're just more successful, which is why they're annoying. And it's just talking about caring about this stuff and actually only caring about making money. Facebook's community guidelines, if they were enforced, would create a very nice social media platform. They are just totally ignored.
Thank you for bringing that up. We did a survey maybe a year ago now, and we surveyed like over, you know, 1,000 women, and we asked them, like, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, every single like mainstream social media platform, like, when you reported someone for misusing the platform, did you get a response? And were you satisfied with that response? And overwhelmingly, like, I think it was over 80% for both answers. The answer was no. And that's unacceptable to me. You report something on Communia, it'll be answered extremely quickly. But that shouldn't be like a novel idea. Like, that shouldn't be like a valid calling card for a new social media platform, but it actually is. And that's sad.
100%. When Donald Trump was prime minister, someone created a duplicate account that just tweeted the same things he did, and they were banned in like a week. And it's just, you're powerful, then you don't get held to the same community standards than if you're not. It, like you say, I don't think you could sum it up more perfectly than, hey, we're a social platform that actually does the terms and community service that Facebook and Twitter say they do. And that's almost enough of a USP on top of all the other awesome stuff that Communia does to succeed and have a bunch of people go, yeah, that sounds brilliant. I'm fully on board.
You know, to be fair to Twitter, actually, they weren't the worst platform. Again, it's like the Communia research. So, you know, take it with whatever grain of salt that says. But in our research, actually, the platform that women felt the most unsafe was Instagram, which I think is really interesting. But we could go on all day about Instagram. So I'll leave it there.
Moving on to our next question. Without never sort of thinking that you were going to end up in the tech space, you know, what does your kind of journey look like starting off with the Restless Network and then having a product as successful as Communia? You know, you said you lay up awake at night thinking about your members. You know, talk to us about that. It must have been pretty mad and pretty scary.
Oh, gosh. You know, I started it as a personal project. I was still very much in that difficult time in my life. And it started off as an editorial site and like an Instagram page, very basic. And it really only has become what it is today, this, you know, very successful social media up and coming app in the past year. Me coming not from the tech industry and coming from the nonprofit industry and also like not knowing how hard it is really did give me a benefit because I was like, let's go, let's do it. And we did it. And I don't think I would have, you know, I think it's really hard to go for a big wild idea when you actually know, like, no, this is going to be really hard. Like, I think that every founder on the other side is like, yeah, I didn't know what I didn't know. But I think it was really a benefit. I think we've been really innovative from a technical standpoint and a creative standpoint in terms of the choices that we've made and how we've structured the app and like the design and everything that's gone into it, because I really have been coming from a consumer standpoint as opposed to someone who is a coder, and I love coders. I don't code. I wish I was smart enough to code. Again, I have a really great team around me, but I think, right, that consumer standpoint has really helped us, you know, differentiate ourselves and contributed to our success.
Based on the success you've had, what are you seeing in the market, you know, in the future looking forward? What's sort of the future of tech that's designed to help women feel more safe and supported, but also, as we mentioned before, you know, hopefully help men deal with their shit and improve and become better partners on this planet with women?
Yeah, I think that there are going to be a lot more siloed social media platforms. We were definitely arguably the first social media platform, to be honest, that really, you know, kind of went for it. Like, this is a safe space for women specifically. I'm seeing, you know, more and more other, you know, social media startups popping up and a lot of really cool ones. Some were good. I think they're New York based. They're doing really interesting stuff with audio and really focused on, you know, people of color. I think it's really exciting. I don't think that we need to all rely on one social media platform. And like, I've been very down on social media because, right, that's like, you know, there are a lot of problems, but there is also so much good that can happen from social media, from being connected with others. And I'm really excited by all of the other cool founders that are coming up right now. And in the next 10 years, we're going to see a huge cultural shift and a huge change in how we interact online. I'm hesitant to say it, but I don't think that Facebook is going to be able to keep up at all, unless they really hire someone like me and actually take that advice on board, as egotistical as that may sound. I mean, I really think, you know, again, I'm always coming back to like level of care. And that's all it is. That's what consumers want. If you're not doing it, I think you're really going to be left behind.
We've seen it as a bit of a trend, you know, from our work as an agency and just from chatting to interesting people for the podcast, is like, there's almost like in a lot of different industries, a reclaiming of tech that has been used for kind of either neutral purposes or nefarious purposes and just gone, why don't we just create an ethical version of this? You know, there's Ecosio, which is a version of Google, which when you use it, plants trees. You know, what one of our old clients called TreeCard, they're Monzo, but every time you use it, it fights climate change. You know, there feels like there's a real growing tech movement of people just going, why don't we just do that, but not evil, and or at least not trying to make a very small group of people a lot of money. And, you know, it's heartening. It gives you some hope for the future. Maybe tech can save us.
And I think it can. And that's why we're here, right? I mean, there are a lot of issues, but I think definitely can. And I love that what you just brought up. The systems that we have can work. We just need to improve it, right? Like, we don't actually need to necessarily come up with all of these new crazy ideas. We just need to improve what we have, which is not bad. All good things are possible. Again, if you care. I'm so cheesy, sorry. I mean it.
Love it.
No, it's great. You've caught on with the core tension and why we named the podcast what we did. We want to, you know, bring on people who are making the effort and trying to save what we can of our human essence through the work in tech. So we're grateful for that. want to move us into the lightning round, where we ask, you know, slightly cheeky, more personal questions about your experience in tech and the kind of things you work with. First question in that bit is just about the tech stack that you work with. What's been like a game-changing piece of tech that you've engaged with in your work that you'd like to share with our audience?
I love Microsoft. Like, Microsoft Azure and my team are best buds. They've been really supportive of us and our mission in general. So Microsoft, if you're listening, give me another call. I love all of their tools. We use React Native, which I think is pretty standard. I personally love Zeppelin. I'm really, 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 really design focused. Like, every design element of Communia has been analyzed so within an inch of its life. And Zeppelin is really the most efficient way that we have found in terms of dealing with like all of the screens and every single detail, which is, can be really overwhelming. So I would definitely recommend Zeppelin as my hero product.
Amazing. We sort of touched on this earlier, but we'd love to get your take on it again. What's one problem tech can't solve for us and why?
Yeah. Oh my God, so many, to be honest. I think it's a very two-sided coin. I mean, it's like, oh God, that's a good question. It's hard. Sexism. I think, you know, I think again, like, it really comes down to so much work that we have to do as a broader society, and that we can't rely on social media and all of the great advocates. They're doing such great work. There are amazing advocates, but like, again, like our governments, our universities, all of our, you know, legitimate systems that should be doing this work, they got to step up to the plate. They really do.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the interesting question inside of that is like, you know, to what degree and how can they leverage tech to support those ends, if at all? But I think there's like just some basic human development stuff that needs to happen with or without tech. So definitely hear you there. Moving quickly into our favorite question of the lightning round, or at least my favorite question, is the tech for bad question. What's the evilest application of tech that you've seen out there?
So many things. I really, like, my biggest issue that I have is like deep fakes. And especially in like today's society, people will believe anything they see online. And so like, if you become the victim of like a deep fake and you're a woman, and, you know, I really don't want to get into it. I don't want to give, you know, like, the more airtime you give to it, sometimes like the worse it is. So I think anyone listening can hear the implication. You know, people will believe it. It ruins women's lives. It ruins people's lives, not just women. Yeah, deep fakes. I could go on. I'll leave it there.
That's a really good, we've not had that before, but yeah, that is just an inherently evil bit of technology. Like, there's no good thing to do with that.
There's one guy on Instagram who does a pretty funny one about like Tom Hanks, and like, sure, that's like a laugh, but like, you see then how easy it is and how believable it is. And it's a great like PC version of like example of like how insidious deepfakes can be. And I'm always talking about that.
I mean, it's literally used in espionage. Like, Russians have used it to smear American diplomats and politicians in, you know, their ongoing Cold War. It really is very convincing technology that's awful when used badly. Hopefully moving us into slightly happier realms. Other than the tech product that you have dreamed up and actualized already with incredible effect, you know, if you could dream up a new tech product, what would it be, and what problem would it solve for whom?
Ooh, good question. I mean, I was just going to say like Communia is my dream tech product, and it absolutely is. One thing I really want to do at some point, whether it's like within the Communia app or in its own app, is I would really like to create a product that was kind of like an elevated buddy system for women walking home alone. You know, right now I think, you know, you have apps that you can kind of like automatically call 911, but I'd really like to kind of do something where you can be randomly matched to another woman walking home alone at the same time. I think that there would be a level of comfort there and a level of real, like, again, like human to human care that a lot of the innovations that are out there don't really have yet. So that's definitely something on my mind. Like, nobody take it. But yeah, I'd love to do that.
To your point about like how we're shaping the world and in particular educating men to be better humans in this world, especially in the treatment towards women. But I remember pretty viscerally going to school in DC and at American University, and remember they had like a blue light system where you could kind of press the button and someone from campus security would come and escort you home. And I remember like the hidden curriculum inside of that, which like I'm sort of just now realizing it, but I didn't realize that like I was being educated that that was a system for women, and that the world is an inherently unsafe place for women. So the blue light system is really just for women, you know, and kind of like was sort of in a weird way socialized that was like normal, you know, and like it just never really dawned on me that like, how do we build other structures so that, you know, like that doesn't need to be in place, you know, like what does the curriculum need to be like for men who are entering college campuses and consent and, you know, anti-rape culture and things like that, so that a blue light system like that doesn't need to exist. So yeah, well, last question that we'll move to here is just in Tech for Good, we're always talking about, and it seems like you've done this, you know, really beautifully in your work, balancing profit and purpose. So obviously you got to make money, keep the lights on, but also, you know, you want to help people and you want to support different communities through your work in tech. So what's worked for you in that space and what guidance could you offer to other folks to show them with that balance?
We actually have a very clear plan when it comes to our revenue streams. Our first monetized product is Community SL. We're really intentional early on to have a very like concrete plan towards profitability, because I think that a lot of companies can get who want to scale, right? Like we want to scale. We want to be the next, like an app to the size of, you know, Reddit or Bumble. But I think without having a financial plan and a financial model in place that does not see consumers as the product, it's really, really hard to always put user well-being first. And so, you know, a huge part of making sure we were benefiting women is, you know, flipping that script. Like our consumers are not the product. We're not selling data to be profitable. We're not advertising. We are seeing, you know, what can we value add that people are excited to, you know, pay a reasonable fee for. That's really helped us. We don't have that push and pull then of, oh, are we going to have to make some shitty choices because we need to please our investors? No, any investor who comes on is going to be pleased with us because we've created value added products that people actually want to pay for. And we're not having to sacrifice user well-being to do that. We're improving user well-being through those value adds. So I'm always a huge proponent, even if Tech for Good, even if it isn't your passion, I think, you know, like, how are you going to make money? I think it's like, I think it's a really powerful question. If you can answer it and do it in a way that, again, like flips that script, I think you're like halfway there.
And I think the VC space as well is like more ethical funding, like, you know, people that come on there and don't have to be convinced, but are like, yeah, this is why we want to invest in Community. We know what the product is and we totally back your mission, rather than like, hey, it's cool that you're pretending about the user welfare, but how are we going to make money? There is a bit of a shift in the funding space as well, hopefully, fingers crossed.
And I've got the answers for that. So holla at me. Oh, God. Not to be egotistical, but yeah, I mean, I'm really confident in that aspect of the business and really, you know, providing that value add. And again, that's where I'm really proud of our, you know, technical creativity.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think one of the tools, but one of the core problems is like, there's a lot of brilliant founders out there like yourself who are developing really cool products that, you know, are hitting all the right notes and stuff. Unfortunately, I think a lot of them don't want to kind of worship at the altar of the traditional VC and angel investor sector and kind of have to convince people and drag people into this idea that their product is serving this community that really needs it. And, you know, they'd rather do the work of like building the product and bootstrapping it, delivering it, stuff like that. You know, eventually, maybe if you want to scale, that funding comes into play. So.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I've obviously, you know, talked to quite a few people in the VC space, and somebody asked me like, but you don't need to scale. And for me, I actually think that we absolutely do to deliver the most quality product, right? Because at the core of Community, it's, you know, crowdsourced, helpful, safe information. And there is a huge difference between having 10 people help you in the span of 10 minutes and 1,000 people help you in the span of 10 minutes. That is an amazing thing. And it can happen, right? But again, at a certain point, we will need to have outside funding. And I think we're in a good position to do that because, again, you know, we have a very clear pathway to profitability. We absolutely think we can be a hugely successful business without sacrificing that user well-being. I think there's a level of creativity that maybe investors are hesitant to take seriously, but I'm willing to take that chance because, you know, why else would I be doing this? There's no other reason.
Absolutely. Real quick, last question. Where can our audience find you and your work with Community? Where to point them on the interwebs?
You can find us on all of our social channels at Our Community. Our website's ourcommunity.com. On the app stores, we're just Community. Type it on in and give us a download and try out all of our social and self tools. You'll really like them. And any feedback is always welcome. So give us an email too. If you want any new features, I'm always begging people to tell us what they want because we actually listen.
We actually listen is a great tagline for our company.
It shouldn't be groundbreaking, but I guess right now it is. I would hope, I really do think the tech industry is going in the right direction. And I hope that one day soon that won't be kind of, you know, groundbreaking statement to make.
Well, Olivia Doremus, CEO and founder of Our Community. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's been an awesome conversation. I think our audience is really gonna enjoy it. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Queenie. That was just awesome.
Thanks for having me.
This was definitely chalking up a win for Tech for Good and Tech Can Save Us.